Hello, and welcome aboard another episode of the Talkin' Texans podcast. It is our first episode after a game number one of the 2023 season. The Baltimore Ravens took down the Houston Texans 25-9 in Baltimore. I'm Paul Gawant, host of Paul Gawant, which you can hear weekdays in the noon on ESPN 96.5 and 92.5. He is Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN, DJ NMA. DJ, there were some good things to take away from this game. I just hate having to say that there are some good things to take away from this game. When it ends with a final score of 25-9, I don't want to say that I'm longing for the days of Lovie Smith. I'm just saying that down the stretch last season, this was a team that was competitive in a couple of games they weren't expected to be. Against Philly, they covered the spread. Against Kansas City, they held it close into overtime. Against Dallas, they covered it as well. It's, I think for some Texans fans, maybe it's going to be difficult to press the reset button once again and go through some of the same growing pains that you maybe felt like this team was going through last year. And while there were some positives on Sunday, I feel like that's sort of what the reality of that 25-9 loss was. It was competitive for a little bit, but of course, with some of the limitations this team currently has, it was going to be really tough for them to hang around for an entire game.
Yeah, I think defense played as well as you possibly could, given the circumstances, because they didn't have many drives where the Ravens marched the entire field and then got in the end zone. Most of it was just shorter fields, like the strip sack, the failed two fourth downs. But outside of that, when the Ravens had to drive the length of the field, they couldn't really get much going. That's why they had well under 300 yards of offense. They forced Lamar to two turnovers. It was a really good defensive performance when you consider the fact that they were out there two starting safeties. And you consider the fact that everybody outside of, I guess, Hassan Ridgeway and Sheldon Rankins played in this scheme recently. Everybody else was kind of getting adapted and used to what was out there. And again, they played extremely well in terms of stopping the run because, yeah, they get 120, but Lamar was a team leader in rushing. But a lot of his came off of scrambles. Remember, we talked about, like, containing Lamar on scrambles or forcing Lamar into scrambles, you can live with those results. And that's what they did a lot. And a lot of it was because of the coverage on the back end that was really good. And sometimes pressure coming up immediately that forced Lamar to have to create instead of sticking with the play and following it through. And there were plays where he got blitzed on third down and forced some quick throws or forced some incompletions. So what we were talking about last week in terms of how to make the game competitive and have the defense keep you in it, that's what they did, a lot of that, right? Blitzing on third downs, which we know Lamar has issues with on third downs. Forcing them into scramble mode, which is boom or bust. But sometimes it can boom where he's creating these explosives, or it can bust where you had the interception of Steve Nelson, or where he scrambled and then he fumbled, which Javier forced it out, which they were able to recover. But again, that fell into what we had discussed last week in terms of the ways to slow down Lamar and that offense. So good coverage on the back end, good pressure up front, and being able to contain the running attack. Denzel Perryman had a really, really good game in terms of stopping the run, like really, really good game.
Yeah, their linebackers are way better.
Yeah, way better. So I think that those are positives on the defensive end. Offensively, there was some good and some bad. Obviously, the offensive line, since they hadn't played together, there wasn't that much continuity. Like when I was rewatching, there were a lot of plays where you can sense the lack of playing together affected some double teams where you would need the guard to work up to the backer and get the mic or whoever the mic was. So sometimes it could be a linebacker, safety, whoever it can be, whoever they target in that play. But since they hadn't had that continuity, there wasn't that ability to get there in terms of like trusting that your guy would be there. You stay on the block a half a second longer than you need to, and then now that linebacker is able to come in and make a play. I think that happened on that 4th-and-1 play where I believe Shaq Mason was blocking whoever was in that 3-tech or 2-eye, whatever. And he was trying to get up to who he was trying to get up to, and he wasn't able to get there. And Raekwon Smith was able to make a play. So, yeah, like you had that. And then obviously that affected the pass game to an extent, right? Because we saw a lot of short passes behind the line of scrimmage, passes in between 0 to 9 yard range, where you see Bobby Slowe trying to mitigate the offense and mitigate how much they're how long they're blocking. So the pass rush for the Ravens isn't able to quickly get to CJ Stroud, because half of those sacks was just CJ trying to make a play instead of just getting the ball out. Obviously, that fourth down and one where he got sacked immediately, like that was immediate, and like there was nobody open either. Like there was nobody open at all.
Yeah.
I don't think Bobby Slowick set that play up the way it needs to be set up. We do play action. There has to be, especially when it gets a front like that with a linebacker as smart as Raekwon Smith, you have to set it up prior, and they obviously did that on their first drive. So like there was no set up in that capacity, and I understood what he was trying to do, but I think the end was unblocked, because when you're trying to do a run a play like that, it just isn't as, you have to set it up. But on a positive note, CJ, amidst all of that, was efficient, had a time to throw. I had to double check what his time to throw was, but it wasn't crazy high. I might look it up right now. Give me a second. His time to throw was, all right, passing summary. Give me a second. Stay with me. Don't turn off the thing. Don't turn off the podcast.
All right, so
his time to throw on 48 dropbacks was 2.6, which is really good. That means you're seeing it quickly. You're getting the ball out. There were a few plays where he extended, which was fine. Like, that happens. It is what it is. But for the most part, he was keeping the offense on schedule. He completed 65% of his passes. He threw for, remember we talked about, okay, what are the standards? Like, what do we want, right? I said over 62% of the passes, over 200 yards passing, and again, getting the ball out quickly for the most part. And Bobby helped him with that. And CJ also did that too, where he was pretty efficient in that capacity, where there wasn't a lot of play where he looked like a deer in headlights. You could see him kind of working through his reads, getting the ball where it needed to go. There were some inaccuracies on some throws to Nico Collins, because he missed a couple of throws to Nico that would have put Nico over 100. But for me, CJ, he didn't look like a QB with a deer in headlights, considering the fact that he had a makeshift offensive line.
Yeah, you knew right away when they put Michael Dieter in at right tackle that something bad was going to happen, and it did. That was where the strip sack was. But I thought that Stroud, with a little help from Luck, did a pretty good job of keeping things clean. As you said, getting the ball out quickly. There were a couple moments where he hesitated, but I mean, you expect that from a rookie quarterback. I'd give him a C minus for the game, mainly because I do think there could have been a couple of interceptions, but honestly, considering the offensive line that was in front of him, I don't want people to take that C minus and say like, oh, Paul thinks he sucked. No, that's a satisfactory performance. All things considered, they weren't able to score touchdowns. So I think that has to be held against him. And there could have been more turnovers, but for a debut, there were enough moments of, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where you see what the Texans saw in him. And I got to say, like, there are a couple of impressive plays that you're probably not going to remember, specifically the play where he shook off a sack only to have it get called back due to a penalty.
Right.
We've had a couple of glimpses of stuff like that where you're like, holy crap, he's capable of things like this, which is what should excite you going forward. It's just in totality when ultimately the final score is 9 points, you can't get too high on it. And every quarterback is capable of having little flashes of brilliance like this if you make it all the way to the NFL. I would say like one or two plays like that. But I really was pleased with what, for the most part, I saw from CJ Stroud in this game with an offensive line in front of him that's not that good, and a wide receiver core that I think we would all admit is limited compared to some of the others across the NFL, even if they did maybe overachieve a little bit on Sunday.
Yeah, yeah. I think stylistically, I think, you know, CJ is going to play like Joe Burrow. Like, if he wants to become a really good quarterback, that's how he has to play, and I think that's what his mindset is. So, like, you're going to see those plays where, like, he's not the best athlete, but where he can shake a guy off, extend the play, and find Tank Dell for first. Obviously, he got called back, but there are a few plays that made you, okay, there's something there, right? There's something there that we can work with, and I think, again, like, he played pretty much in structure because, again, like, we get enamored with the Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allens when they play out of structure, and Lamar Jackson's, but there's a lot of bad that can also happen when you play out of structure too. And we saw the last night with Josh Allen, right, where he was doing a whole bunch of dumb stuff,
man.
Right? You know, like, yeah, like his first interception, like, obviously out of structure, he's running around trying to make a play,
And he's putting his shoulder into people like he's still a fullback and stuff. Like, right. Dude, what are you doing? Right. Take care of yourself. He said he was the reason they lost, and he was the reason that they lost.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So you know, you want your guys to still be in structure and create plays. It's because you can extend the play and find somebody down the field for a big play while still roughly being in the pocket, right? We kind of saw Tua Tagovailoa do that one play to Tyreek Hill where the stuff wasn't open initially. He stepped up in the pocket and threw on the run down the sideline for a big game. Like, you can still do stuff like that where you can create within the pocket. Like, Tom Brady did that a lot. Like, as you know, you're a big Tom Brady guy. Like, Tom Brady extended a bunch in the pocket to create big plays with just small movements, subtle movements in the pocket, being able to step up and avoid a rusher coming around the edge. Like, there's a lot of ways where you can still be effective as a quarterback without having to do all the off structure, out of the pocket, running around with your hair cut off type of ordeals, you know? So I was really, you know, there's a lot of good things to pull from CJ, but also things, you know, he got to work on, like being able to get the ball into the end zone. Like, that's a big thing, right? Like, you have to, as a quarterback, you have to lead your offense into the end zone. You got to figure out a way to get them there, you know? And that's a negative that we have to, at the end of the day, like, you have to discuss. 9 points, no matter what, you know, league you're in, high school, peewee, whatever, college, 9 points just isn't going to cut it. But there's a lot to build on. And I think this entire year has to be about the flashes and potential that you see, because you are dealing with a rookie quarterback, right? You're going to have moments where he probably goes out there, he throws one touchdown, three interceptions. He goes out a game where he throws two touchdowns, no interception, the pass rate over 100. That's going to happen. It's going to be a roller coaster ride. So each week, you just want to find the positives that you can build on and learn from.
And there were some. I want to shift from talking about the quarterback to the head coach. The defensive scheme, which I'm sure he had a big part of, Matt Burke as well, the defensive coordinator, it obviously played well. What do you think of some of the other moments, though, in the game? Specifically, there's a couple of fourth down attempts that the Texans made that I think have been second-guessed a bit. Some of the play calls in certain situations were maybe not what you wanted. I really hated it. It was like a 3rd and 5 where they ran that play to the side of the field.
Oh, to Noah Brown.
Yeah, it's not college. You know, you're not going to outrun people to the wide side of the field in the NFL. The lack of timeouts at halftime, not much of an effort to run the football, though. Would they really have been able to run the football that much with that offensive line? I think that they were ready to play and had confidence in themselves, which is great. But I do think that was a learning experience for DeMeco Ryans and that coaching staff. It's their first game working all together. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious as to what they took away from it. I definitely think it left a little bit to be desired.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think 2 things can be true. Defensively, he called a really, really good game. Because, like, Lamar and that offense couldn't really do much consistently. And then on the flip side, because he's the head coach, he hired Bobby Slowick, so someone that's going to follow him. And, again, like, you can always be like, hey, we need to run the rock. We need to stop this run. Like, let's get Damien the ball. Damien didn't get the ball enough, in my opinion. On that fourth down, obviously, I'm actually looking at it right now on my laptop. I like the idea. Because, remember, the first time they tried to play action and it didn't work.
Right. But I was like on the play fake before you continue, DJ. I thought to myself, everything that involves a play fake takes too long to develop. And with the offensive line that was out there on Sunday, I was sort of of the belief that, you want to do play fake from time to time, but with everything taking as long as it does to develop with a play fake, you're probably asking for trouble if you do that. And of course, CJ got sacked almost instantaneously.
Yeah. And I think this kind of just goes to like the makeshift offensive line. Like, I'm looking at a play right now. Like, what's it called? Like, Fant gets beat across his face by, by Clowney. He gets beat across his face. So while Shaq is trying to work up to Raekwon Smith by Clowney, you know, crossing Fant's face inside, now basically what Clowney did was become a pick man on Shaq Mason, which allowed Clowney to come through. I know I said earlier that it might have been a little bit of communication, but while I'm watching it, it actually wasn't miscommunication. It was just Fant got beat bad enough to the point where Well, not bad enough, but like he basically got crossed to the point where it got like Shaq Mason wasn't able to work up to Wakecon, which allowed Wakecon to come in and make the tackle for no gain. So, I mean, they're gonna just come with reps. Like they're gonna have to continue to improve on all those fronts. But yeah,
complicating it, George Fant's hurt now, you know, and
yeah,
I don't know what happened there, DJ. I don't know if you expect him back anytime soon, but. I mean, shoot.
We'll know tomorrow based on just his practice ability. Like, if he practices tomorrow, then we'll be all right, cool. But if not, then
they got to sign somebody because I mean, if you're throwing Michael Dieter out there at right tackle,
no. So I think it'll be Josh Jones at right tackle.
So let me move Josh to right for left guard.
Okay. Yeah.
Dieter inside the left guard. Okay.
Yeah. So now, how much drop off we'll see there? We'll see. I think Josh Jones is a better right tackle than his left guard, obviously. But I don't know how much – I don't know what the drop-off is between Josh Jones, a left guard, and Michael Dieter, a left guard. So we'll see in that capacity.
Yeah. Suppose you could go to Pro Football Focus grades in the preseason if you really want to get excited.
Right.
No, it's not great. And we'll talk more about the Texans and Colts matchup a little bit later in the week. We like what we saw from the defense. We talked about all of it. Specifically, the secondary, I thought, did a great job. Jimmy Ward there. Jalen Petrie's a psycho. You know, this is my little concern, DJ.
Mm-hmm.
As Petrie had to go to the hospital with a busted lung. Mm-hmm. Holy crap. He's got to pick his battles a little bit better. I don't know if you remember the two plays when on the television they were moving left to right, but the Ravens are in the red zone, and on one play Petrie takes out a block and he gets called for a penalty for it, for essentially chopping. And then the very next play they run to the outside and Jalen Petrie, like an absolute psychopath, just runs full speed into two offensive linemen, like doesn't hesitate at all. And he gets sent back and goes flying.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a badass moment, but I also thought, okay, maybe he's going to have to pick his battles, and him getting hurt a little bit later, I suppose, is confirmation bias, but he is definitely a maniac out there. And he and the rest of that secondary did play pretty well in this game, at least when they were out there.
So I have no issues with Petrie playing that way. Obviously, like, the injury was more freak accident than anything. So that was just like, that's a freak accident in that capacity. But
I don't know though. He's not. He was a linebacker.
He played safety though. He played safety though. So
yeah, but it's like, I think you can do that every now and then.
But yeah. Week
one, I don't know. I almost want him to learn to live and fight another day, even though I loved seeing it. I remember thinking to myself, man, this guy is absolutely nuts. I know the Ravens just scored a touchdown, but it was a really badass moment. And he got killed, but he didn't slow down at all. He just ran into it full speed, and the momentum, you know, physics still sent him backwards.
Yeah, not for sure. But I mean, I think Petrie will be just fine.
I think he will too. I want him to do that now, but you know.
Yeah, for sure. I feel you coming from.
Derek Stingley, your guy, did a great job against Odell Beckham Jr. I don't know how you feel about those pass interference calls that were drawn. I personally enjoyed Odell Beckham Jr. being silenced in that game. I thought Stingley did a really good job. You know, there was one play, too, where Jackson was under pressure. He threw the ball to the right, and I think if he stepped into it, Stingley would have picked six, that bad boy.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, no, that was elite. That was a very good cornerback play. And no, honestly, I think throughout the entire – I think the team did a really good job against the receivers. The only receiver that actually got off was Zay Flowers. Zay Flowers was special. Yeah, there's so many people that would say stuff like, why aren't the Texans using Tank Dell in that same capacity? And it's almost like people don't understand how good Zay is.
He's
like,
probably the best receiver in the draft class, at least based off of 1 week. That was a really awesome performance.
Exactly. Zay went first round. So, like, there's a higher investment to utilizing him versus Tank, who went in the third round. right? Tank has dynamic ability, but the coaches have seen every single practice from OTAs to now. Same with Zay and same with Tank. Comparing and saying, oh, use him the same way doesn't – one, they're similar players, but Zay is 1-2 inches taller and has 20 pounds on him. So, like, yes, we're seeing all the jet sweep stuff and we're seeing all this bubble screens and stuff. But you have to also remember that Tank is 20 pounds lighter. So, like, you also have to worry about if you do too much of that, he can get hurt. And, again, like, Zay Flowers, I thought he was the best receiver in the draft. That's what I thought. Because I've argued with people, like, you know, I think he's the best receiver in the draft. Like, I think he's better than Jordan Addison, because, like, he has that dynamic ability to win vertically, like, legitimately win vertically. Obviously, getting that, like, where him and Tank are similar is their ability to separate. That's where it's similar. Like, that's exactly where it's similar. And that comparison, I think Tank is an excellent separator. But, like, Zay has that, and he can push it vertically, which makes it harder to defend, right? Because if I know you can also legitimately take the top off, right? Like, it's not going to take a perfect throw. Like, you can legitimately take the top off. That forces DBs to open up their hips quicker. We saw that with on the 20-yard game when he caught on Derek Stingley, where Derek opened up a little bit earlier, and then Zay Flowers was able to cut to the outside, boom, 20-yard game. But that was the only reception Zay Flowers caught on Derek Stingley. The play where Tyvier Thomas forced a fumble on Lamar, everybody locked up. It was cover three. Everybody was locked up. And, like, Zay Flowers ran a dig route, and you saw Derek Stingley kind of run that route for him unsurely. Like, it was almost like he didn't know if Zay was really going inside, but he still was on top of him. And, like, let's say Lamar would have thrown that on time. Boom, that would have been intercepted. I think the entire secondary had very sticky coverage. Odell's average yard separation was 1.6. Like, that is very, very good for a defensive back group to basically hold a guy that's known for separating at a high level to hold him to that amount of yards. And you know how small 1.6 is? That's super, like, that is super, super, super small in terms of separation, and they were able to do their thing there. Obviously, Zay Flowers, but, like, they had the schemes. Zay Flowers open a lot. Like, there's a lot of scheming where they were getting the ball in his face, things of that nature. Like that one tunnel screen where he was able to pick up a whole bunch of yardage. That one zig route where he was able to beat Steve Nelson, who had a very good game too. But, like, even then, like, when you think all those things, the DB room still held their own across the board. And I said that. I said, like, there's a lot of weeks where I like that DB room against a lot, like, anybody else's opposing options. And I think week one only validated that.
That is a receiver core that has three former first-round picks.
Exactly.
Right. And, like, an Odell Beckham Jr. And look, who knows if Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be the same player that he was before. We'll see the remainder of the season. If he is, I mean, you feel a lot better about the performance. Bateman's coming off the Liz Frank injury, but he's a former first-round pick. And to your points about Flowers, now I am hoping that the Texans coaching staff maybe looks at what Zay Flowers did and thinks to themselves, damn it, we got to try to do something like this with Tank Dell. But to your point about Flowers, I think Flowers got overlooked because of where he went to school. I mean, this is an ACC guy who's playing at Boston College. It's like the most forgotten probably program in the ACC. Mm-hmm. People in Boston barely care about Boston College as it is. And I'm wondering if this guy had played at a better program, like where he would have been drafted, because his twitchiness is truly special. I mean, there are players in the NFL who obviously are just about as twitchy as, say, Flowers. But in your first game to jump off the screen the way that he did, which is also piggybacking off of what everybody in Baltimore had been saying about him all offseason, it really was impressive. And, I mean, yeah, those moments where Flowers was doing those essentially like dancing around people, that one move that he had on, like, while he was on the left sideline where he juked out like two people within, it seemed like, a half second of one another with just two steps. It was incredible. Like, the guy's a really special player. So against that whole group in totality, and really considering that Jimmy Ward was banged up and missed the game, and on top of that, you don't even have Jalen Petrie for the whole game. Yeah, the secondary did a great job. And I'm excited to see what they're going to be able to do next week, because I think they're a clear matchup advantage against the Colts.
Right. I mean, it's just going to come down. Can they stop the run, and can they stop the quarterback design run, whether it's power, read options, veneer read options, power RPOs. And they can just stop that, they'll be fine. In all honesty, I mean, I mean, since AR can run, I'm really interested to see, like, when they go man, do they make Christian Harris the spy, right?
Yeah.
If it's like 35, 36, 37, all right, are we going to make Christian Harris the spy? Because Christian Harris has the sideline, the sideline speed to keep up with AR and then just kind of, because I'm going to be real, like, the Colts receivers are they should not get that open against the Texans DBs. And the Texans DBs were able to lock up or contain the Ravens passing attack with Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, Odell Beckham. They should be able to contain and lock down Stephen Corlea by Michael Pittman. I respect Michael Pittman. He's a thousand.
Pittman's good, but the rest.
Yeah, exactly.
Alec Pierce, Josh Downs, Isaiah. Yeah.
Josh Downs is solid. Josh Downs is solid. I'll give him that. He was solid coming out of UNC. I really like what I saw out of him. But again, like, this is his second game in the NFL. So, yeah, bro, like in all honesty, like, this should be a game where it just really comes down to you. Can you stop the run, right? So that's kind of where I'm at.
We'll talk more about that game in a couple of days. Overall thoughts before we wrap this thing up after the Texans lost their season opener 25-9 to the Ravens. DJ, is there anything that you feel like we haven't said? Because I think, like, there are signs of progress. I think for some people, it's just frustrating to admit that, like, hey, you progress, it seemed like you're making at the end of last year. It's hard to translate that from last year to another season when you got a new head coach and you got a new quarterback. And you are, even though some of these players were carrying that over from last year into this year, you are essentially starting from scratch here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think what was a positive, a legitimate positive was, you know, CJ Stroud in the short to intermediate game.
Yeah.
He went, I'm looking at it right now. CJ Stroud in the short to intermediate game on throws 0-9, went 14 for 18 for 130, passer rate of 96. Yards per attempt was 7.2. Completion percentage, obviously, 77. And completion percentage over expectation was 7.7. So that's really good. That means, like, you're fitting among tight windows where the expectation isn't for you to complete that pass, and you're completing those passes in those tight windows. I don't think people realize that the majority of his throws were in tight windows to an extent. Because, again, like, it's not like the receivers had a respectable game. But I believe the percent, like, his tight window throws was roughly 21% compared to Lamar, which was 9. Because, like, you know, you saw there was a lot more creativity in the sense of getting the ball to the guys in space. So there was opportunity. So, like, a lot of that plays into why Lamar's was a lot lower, because they were getting Zay Flowers a lot of passes in space. But CJ Stroud was obviously making some really good throws, even in the intermediate, 10 to 19 yards.
Yeah.
He went 5 for 9, which, again, is progress. That's good. That means you're pushing the ball for 10 yards and you're getting completion. And there was a couple where he missed. Like, he missed Nico Collins on a deep out and a deep in, right? He missed this just by a smidget, which I'm like, all right, cool. Like, that's stuff that we can work with, where those guys are getting open and you're finding those, you're reading it correctly. You're just a tad bit off. So those are things that you can truly build on in that capacity. Again, his completion over expectation for those throws, intermediate, was 6.6, which, again, means that you're throwing into tight windows and the expectation isn't for it to be completed, but it is. So, again, credit to CJ and credit to his receivers. So that's where I'm like, all right, there's some things to build on from that game. Because, again, his time to throw was 2.6, which means you're seeing it quickly and you're getting the ball out. Obviously, he had a few passes behind the line of scrimmage, which is going to help that number. But again, 2.6 is 2.6, right? So I'm good with what I saw from CJ. Obviously, Will Anderson had a phenomenal game where he had 6 pressures, 3 quarterback hits, 1 sack. Like, he did some stuff that people haven't done. Like, I saw a stat that he was the first rookie to have a game like that since Nick Bosa and Josh Allen from the Jaguars. So, again, like, that's good work.
Feel a lot better about this, having talked about it with you.
Yeah.
And we'll see what they're able to do later in the week. And we'll talk about this matchup against the Indianapolis Colts going into the weekend of the next episode of the Talkin' Texans podcast. In the meantime, make sure you're catching DJ Bien-Aimé's work. Mission. He's boots on the ground. Boots on the ground at NRG Stadium. You can catch that at ESPN.com. You can catch my show 10 to noon weekdays, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. For DJ Bien-Aimé. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long, farewell. We'll be back at it again on another Talking Texans episode later this week.
Peace.